This is your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM.
This is the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. This evening, we devote the entire program to turning back time.
If I could turn back time, if I could find a way, baby.
Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On the panel today is Richard. There are many events we could mark this week. 65 years ago, on 1961, January the 31st, as part of its preparation to put the first person in space, NASA launched a Redstone rocket on a suborbital flight with a chimpanzee called Ham, successfully recovered. 60 years ago, on 1966, January the 31st, the Soviet Union launched Luna 9, which a few days later became the first unmanned craft to successfully land on the moon and transmit back pictures from the surface of the moon. 5 years later, on 1972, January the 31st, Apollo 14 was launched on a Saturn V rocket towards the moon. The mission landed two men on Frau Moreau. One of them, Alan Shepard, found time to play golf. Well, all of those are worthy of detailed mention. However, we turn our attention to Space Shuttle Mission STS-51L. 40 years ago today, Universal Time, after several delays, the 25th Space Shuttle mission lifted off. Its mission was to place the second of NASA's large tracking and data relay satellites into orbit. Also in the cargo bay was Spartan 303, a satellite to study the approaching Halley's Comet. Not that most of the public cared about these. All attention was on the seventh person aboard, schoolteacher Krista McAuliffe. To this day, the doomed flight of STS-51L is known as the Challenger accident, and the crew member they most likely to remember is, of course, Krista. Regular listeners to the Space Show knows that Turn Back Time, our series that we run here, is that most of the audio clips are from reel-to-reel tape recordings that I made of shortwave and local New Zealand radio. However, after STS-1, the first space shuttle mission in 1981, I stopped recording. Why, you ask? Because I had a new toy, Video Home System, or VHS. I still continued to listen to shortwave radio as the only way to follow space events live from New Zealand. The STS-51L launch had been delayed from January the 25th to the 26th to the 27th and then the 28th. Each night I had stayed up until the wee hours of the morning listening to the Voice of America. So as January the 28th rolled into the morning of January the 29th, I was very, very tired. So I kept the shortwave radio on my bedside table and laid down to rest. You guessed it, I drifted off to sleep. The Voice of America had some jazz. Not my favourite genre of music, but it was playing anyway. Suddenly, a change in program jolted me awake. It was 3:30 a.m. and the Voice of America had begun its live commentary. I dragged myself out of bed and began taking notes for a magazine that I was editor of. And so it came to pass that I was one of likely very few people in New Zealand to hear live the Challenger disaster. Liftoff came at 3:38 a.m. and The shuttle's external tank exploded 71 seconds later, destroying the Challenger orbiter and killing its crew of seven. At that time, in New Zealand, television did not start until mid-afternoon, unlike here in Australia, when breakfast television was the thing. On the radio, it was announced that TV One would come on air at 10:30 a.m. to show the accident and then shut down. It was not until the evening news that most New Zealanders had a chance to see what had happened. Of course, I had my VHS tape recorder ready and running.
Good evening. It was the worst disaster in 25 years of space exploration by the Americans. What appeared to be a routine shuttle mission turned into a nightmare for millions of Americans watching the liftoff on television. And among the viewers, many thousands of schoolchildren, excited by the knowledge that in the crew was New Hampshire schoolteacher Krista McAuliffe, the first private citizen to ride the shuttle.
They gathered for what turned out to be their last meal at 6:48 this morning, the ceremonial breakfast. For months, they had trained together. Astronaut Allison Onizuka from Hawaii, the star of this mission, New Hampshire schoolteacher Krista McAuliffe, mission commander Dick Scobie, pilot Michael Smith, astronauts Judith Resnick and Ronald McNair, and payload specialist Gregory Jarvis. After 3 days of delays, they appeared tired, but quickly rejuvenated by applause as they headed for the launch pad.
Scobie followed by mission specialist Judy Resnick, Ron McNair, pilot Mike Smith, followed by Krista McAuliffe, teacher in space, and Ellison on
the team. Visual orders Commander Scobie to go to full power.
Challenger, go and throttle up.
Challenger, go and throttle up.
Suddenly, an explosion.
Flight controllers here looking very carefully at the situation. Obviously a major malfunction.
NASA loses all communication with Challenger, but the crowd still does not realize that something's gone wrong. Within seconds, Challenger disintegrates.
We have a report from the flight dynamics officer that the vehicle has exploded.
For the spectators and Krista McAuliffe's parents, joy turns to confusion, worry, and a realization of tragedy. The $1.2 billion spaceship, its seven crew members, and their satellite payload disappear.
Kerr, the Challenger was about 90 seconds into its flight. It was at an altitude of nearly 17,000 meters, and it was traveling at three times the speed of sound. Space officials were today reluctant to pinpoint the cause until they've studied the mass of information fed back by computers on the spacecraft in the last few moments. But television pictures of the explosion are already being analyzed.
Here you see what they call a nominal ascent. All those words, textbook, picture perfect, and then suddenly a tiny flame just where the fuel lines go from the big external tank into Challenger itself. On the left with the arrow, a plume where gases from the tank are forming, obviously feeding the fire. Now you will see the flame creeping up the external tank in between the tank and the shuttle itself. This is the beginning of the huge catastrophic explosion that absolutely engulfed the entire system. You will see a second explosion right at the top of that big external tank. This is obviously what put the entire thing into flames and probably what destroyed the shuttle almost instantly. Now for a moment, the smoke clears and we see emerging, apparently, the top of Challenger. We think this is the last picture we have ever seen of Challenger before it fell to the sea with its precious cargo. And as the sequence is going to continue, you will see that mammoth, horrible explosion on the right. One of the solid rocket boosters split away now from the tank and the shuttle itself. These boosters cannot be controlled once they're lit, so it has obviously gone off on its own into the wrong place, but it does not appear, I repeat, appear from what we can see that it was the cause of the explosion or that anything happened to it. So that's the sequence. We can see that. We can try to understand it. What we don't know is why it happened, and that's what we now need to find out.
Today's space shuttle mission attracted more than usual interest because a civilian was among the crew for the first time. She was 37-year-old Krista McAuliffe, a high school teacher from Concord, New Hampshire.
Krista McAuliffe's students and friends at Concord High School were ready to watch a dream come true this morning. Instead, they became witnesses to a nightmare.
Two, 1, and liftoff.
In the moments after the launch, their celebrations drowned out the first news of the tragedy. But the clamor turned to quiet as this picture burned itself into their memories.
Reports from the flight dynamics officer indicate that the vehicle apparently exploded and that impact in the water.
Some people were covering their eyes, and some people were just watching the TV set with a blank look on their face.
It was really quite dramatic. At first, you know, everyone was really happy, all these smiles, and then suddenly you saw a lot of people crying in the halls, and it was really pretty sad.
Now the public celebration had turned into private mourning and shock.
She was a part of us. She was part of a family. And just like, if your sister or brother died, she'll be remembered. It was a hell, just a hell.
Though Krista McAuliffe's students and friends have known her here in Concord for years, she became known to the nation when she decided to pursue her dreams. Those dreams have been sparked by President Reagan's announcement a year ago for a teacher astronaut. The search for that history maker brought 11,000 applications, but only one made the final grade.
And the winner, the teacher who will be going into space, Krista McAuliffe.
From the outset, she approached this mission and her training with the same ideals she brought to the classroom.
Well, it was a challenge, and it was something that I always ask my students, you know, to go and seek whatever they feel they can do and reach a little higher.
She wore her spirit on her face, and her hometown loved it.
Difficult to say this.
Now they are remembering it. A special counselor will be brought to Concord High tomorrow to help students begin dealing with their loss. But perhaps Krista McAuliffe's own words echo the best advice.
To follow your instincts and go for your dreams, and I hope they achieve that.
Today's disaster stunned the United States, and the space shuttle program was immediately suspended. It will not resume until space officials are sure that they know exactly what caused today's explosion. President Reagan took the unprecedented step of postponing his annual State of the Union message and declaring a week of national mourning for the seven astronauts. But in a speech on network television, he vowed that the space program will continue.
I've always had great faith in and respect for our space program. And what happened today does nothing to diminish it. We don't hide our space program. We don't keep secrets and cover things up. We do it all up front and in public. That's the way freedom is, and we wouldn't change it for a minute. We'll continue our quest in space. There will be more shuttle flights and more shuttle crews, and yes, more volunteers, more civilians, more teachers in space. Nothing ends here. Our hopes and our journeys continue.
New Zealand's Prime Minister has sent a message of sympathy to President Reagan. Mr. Longley says New Zealanders learned of the disaster with great sadness. He said New Zealand salutes the courage of the American astronauts who face danger as they work in space, and New Zealand joins in mourning for the dead.
Coverage of the Challenger disaster 40 years ago on Television New Zealand's Channel 1. Here in Australia, Space Association member Helena Roberts had her video recorder running and was able to capture President Ronald Reagan's speech to the nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd planned to speak to you tonight to report on the State of the Union, but the events of earlier today have led me to change those plans. Today is a day for mourning and remembering. Nancy and I are pained to the core by the tragedy of the Shuttle Challenger. We know we share this pain with all of the people of our country. This is truly a national loss. 19 years ago, almost to the day, we lost three astronauts in a terrible accident on the ground. But we've never lost an astronaut in flight. We've never had a tragedy like this. And perhaps we've forgotten the courage it took for the crew of the shuttle. But they, the Challenger 7, were aware of the dangers, but overcame them and did their jobs brilliantly. We mourn seven heroes: Michael Smith, Dick Scobee, Judith Resnick, Ronald McNair, Ellison Onizuka, Gregory Jarvis, and Krista McAuliffe. We mourn their loss as a nation together. To the families of the seven, we cannot bear, as you do, the full impact of this tragedy. But we feel the loss, and we're thinking about you so very much. Your loved ones were daring and brave, and they had that special grace, that special spirit that says, give me a challenge, and I'll meet it with joy. They had a hunger to explore the universe and discover its truths. They wished to serve, and they did. They served all of us. We've grown used to wonders in this century. It's hard to dazzle us. But for 25 years, the United States space program has been doing just that. We've grown used to the idea of space, and perhaps we forget that we've only just begun. We're still pioneers. They, the members of the Challenger crew, were pioneers. And I want to say something to the schoolchildren of America who were watching the live coverage of the shuttle's takeoff. I know it's hard to understand, but sometimes painful things like this happen. It's all part of the process of exploration and discovery. It's all part of taking a chance and expanding man's horizons. The future doesn't belong to the faint-hearted. It belongs to the brave. The Challenger crew was pulling us into the future, and we'll continue to follow them. I've always had great faith in and respect for our space program, and what happened today does nothing to diminish it. We don't hide our space program. We don't keep secrets and cover things up. We do it all up front and in public. That's the way freedom is, and we wouldn't change it for a minute. We'll continue our quest in space. There will be more shuttle flights and more shuttle crews, and yes, more volunteers, more civilians, more teachers in space. Nothing ends here. Our hopes and our journeys continue. I want to add that I wish I could talk to every man and woman who works for NASA or who worked on this mission and tell them, your dedication and professionalism have moved and impressed us for decades, and we know of your anguish. We share it. There's a coincidence today. On this day, 390 years ago, the great explorer Sir Francis Drake died aboard ship off the coast of Panama. In his lifetime, the great frontiers were the oceans, and a historian later said he lived by the sea, died on it, and was buried in it. Well, today, we can say of the Challenger crew, their dedication was, like Drake's, complete. The crew of the Space Shuttle Challenger honored us for the manner in which they lived their lives. We will never forget them, nor the last time we saw them, this morning, as they prepared for their journey and waved goodbye and slipped the surly bonds of Earth to touch the face of God. Thank you.
And one little niggle point. Events in space or towards space are logged in universal time. So the Challenger was launched in January the 28th, which is today, in universal time and in American time as well. But here in Australia and in New Zealand, it was in the wee hours of the morning of January the 29th. And of course, we found out about it here, as I've explained, on January the 29th. Now, the seven astronauts of the STS-51L Challenger mission have been eulogized and commemorated by many singers and poets. One of them is John Denver.
Well, I guess that you probably know by now, I was one who wanted to fly. I wanted to ride on that arrow of fire right up into heaven. And I wanted to go for every man, every child, every mother of children. I wanted to carry the dreams of all people right up to the stars. And I prayed that I'd find an answer there, or maybe I would find a song, giving a voice to all of the hearts that cannot be heard. And for all of the ones who live in fear, and all of those who stand apart, my being there together. They were flying for me, they were flying for everyone, they were trying to see day for each and every one. They gave us their light, they gave us their spirit and all they could be. They were flying for me. They were flying for me. And I wanted to wish on the Milky Way that's upon a falling star. I wanted to give myself and free myself and join myself with it all. Given the chance to dream, it can be done. The promise of tomorrow is real. Children of spaceship Earth, the future belongs to us all. She was flying for me. She was flying for everyone. She was trying to see a brighter day for each and every one. She gave us her life. She gave us her spirit and all she could be. She was flying for me, they were flying for me. They were flying for everyone. They were trying to see a brighter day for each and every one. They gave us their life, they gave us their spirit and all they could be. They were flying for me. They were flying for me. They were flying for me. They were flying for me.
John Denver honoring the crew of shuttle mission STS-51L. They were flying for me.
This is your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM.
We're listening to the Space Show, and today we are remembering the Challenger crew and the accident that killed them. Just a point of note, they did not get into space. They are, you know, a commercial airliner flies at about 10 kilometres altitude. They were about 1.5 times that altitude, so nowhere near in space, but they were heading that way. Well, Leslie Fish has written a number of songs remembering the crew of STS-51L, and this is a song she wrote and performed in 1986, A Wishful Legacy for Challenger.
Challenger, thundering swan, racing the dawn, suddenly gone. Conquer the sky, stop and ponder. We live in the shadows of prejudice, terror, and hunger. In a world plagued by fear and the threat of nuclear squander, stop and wonder why. The seven who died when they challenged the skies.
justice that no, not the dream they carried with them. To the voices that plead for harmony and wisdom, stop and listen now. More than statues of stone, let their legacy be a world united in hope with the common destiny. Peace on earth, peace and freedom. Tomorrow's dream, today for all the children. Peace on earth, peace in space. For challengers,
that was Leslie Fish. Howard Nemiroff is a well-known and very popular American poet. He has written this about the STS-51L Challenger disaster. It's called On an Occasion of National Mourning.
Of course, the other time I'd considered on my own without being commissioned by NASA, naturally, when it didn't work so good, called On an Occasion of National Mourning. And you saw it all many times, as everyone did. On an occasion of national mourning. It is admittedly difficult for a whole nation to mourn and be seen to do so, but it can be done. The silvery platitudes were waiting in their silos for just such an emergent occasion. Cards of sympathy from heads of state were long ago prepared for launching and are bounced around the world from satellites at near the speed of light. The divine services are telecast from the hometowns. Children are interviewed and say politely, gravely, how sorry they are. And in a week or so, the thing is done. The sea gives up its bits and pieces, and the investigating board pinpoints the cause by inspecting bits and pieces. Nothing of the sort can ever happen again. The prescribed course of tragedy is run through omen to amen. As in a play, the nation rises again, reborn of grief, and ready to seek the stars, remembering the shuttle, forgetting the loom.
The Challenger tribute song was written by Stephen Kay about 2 days after the disaster, but was not published or released. In 1986, Stephen Kay was a singer, and then he went on to become a music programmer. The original song was called The Challenger, Where No One's Gone Before. Well, he recorded this for the 25th anniversary of STS-51L accident on 2011, January the 28th. Here's Stephen Kay.
Space Shuttle mission.
life's a woman beyond the wild. To bring that knowledge home and teach it to the child. Faint-hearted souls quaking compromise. It's with the brave that the future lies. When no one's gone.
That was Stephen Kay, recorded in 2011. 2 years later, in 2013, we have the song we're going to play. Now, Nick Turner was born in Oxford, England, and was the co-founder and former singer and saxophonist with the band Hawkwind. Yeah, you remember them? Well, this song is as violent and noisy as the space shuttle disaster it commemorates. This is Fallen Angel, STS-51L, by Nick Turner from 2013.
Let's go, command. 8, 7, 6. We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1. And liftoff.
We'll be right back.
Nick Turner, 2013, for Fallen Angel, SDS-51L. We have more coming up shortly.
Serving Bayside Melbourne for 35 years, this is 88.3 Southern FM.
There were many eulogies delivered about the Challenger 7. We've got one here. It's by Ernie Caswell.
We're here, all of us, as friends and most of us as believers in something. Friends and believing friends together face the common mystery of life and death, and not so differently. For each of us experiences an aloneness at this moment, keener for those who knew and loved these seven in a special way, but aloneness for us all. The fact is that of all the deeds of men and women, the deed of death seems mine alone to do. The whole burden of the deed, the whole responsibility seems mine alone, each person's alone. And it is a deed I do, to die. It is an act and an accomplishment to take the moments and the currents of my life, and in my freedom to dispose of them, believers say to offer them, with absolute finality. It is my most important act, the ultimate exercise of my freedom, in a lone bed, or in a cataclysm of nature, or in a man-made disaster. Each death is singular. So we share a certain helplessness whenever one we love or admire does, in whatever way, this deed. We experience a sense of the frailty of life. We feel, as seldom otherwise, how fragile are all things, including the existence that we know and rightly prize. We are stripped of our pretensions and customary attitudes, and in this nakedness we find comfort in our rituals, and they are varied. For some of us, they are centered in church, synagogue, temple, ashram, or coven. They may take place in front of marble altars or out under the trees and sky. Whatever our background and traditions, almost all of us share a most ancient ritual, song. Passed on from time immemorial by skald and bard, the custom of commemorating those things which are truly significant to us with music has become one of our most basic rituals. This singular act, this deed, committed by each of them, Dick Scobie, Judith Resnick, Krista McAuliffe, Ronald McNair, Michael Smith, Ellison Onizuka, and Gregory Jarvis, came about because each was a believer, and we share or we respect the vision with which each could offer life and death. In our nakedness and our fragility, we join in this ancient ritual of music because it deeply seems to us that history moves, and purposefully, because the God of history has spoken in events and prophets' voices, because there was this person, Jesus, Moses, Zarathustra, Buddha, who breathed out a spirit that all our habitual piety and tired cliches have not been able to extinguish. Because this ritual celebration of God's covenant word and music, love and sacrifice and reconciliation, carries its message, more meaningful than any creed, across the barriers of our aloneness into the futile void of our helplessness. It is a deed that satisfies, a pledge that challenges, a taste of that elusive cup of peace, community, harmony, love man slowly seeks. True, this sign, this ritual of songs of sadness, joy, remembrance, and hope, this deed we do in song is part of the tent that we live on earth and will one day be folded up. Yet, of all the furnishings of our tent, it survives most handily the test of a friend, a hero's death. And the isolation that they are lifeless bodies cries out to us tent dwellers does not exclude a sense of deep, unthreatened unity. Because the faith this ritual revives, says yes to knowing that there is a spirit greater than any of us that will allow, no, that will require us to grow, to expand our frontiers, to accomplish our full potential, to grow. All of us as individuals must grow, and the entity that is composed of all sentient beings must grow. In mere organic entities, the roots that give nourishment from the earth, the stems and branches that support, the leaves that process sunlight for more food, and even the flowers that eventually give way to new seeds are unaware that they are component parts of a total unity. Let it not be so with us. Let us all be aware of our interdependence, the global entity of which we are part, must be allowed to grow to become truly universal. Each of the seven whom we commemorate here today is like a seed, and the hard pod that, in their cases as in ours, resisted the ascent toward unity and harmony with all creatures and their source, that pod is broken and it opens up. The spirit that drives us on toward sharing self and substance with our fellow men now has free rein over them.
In the wake of the tragedy, a number of funds were set up. One of them was called the Challenger 7 Fund. It had an official song called Starship Fly On, and it was written in 1986 and is performed here by Jerry Dyke, D-Y-C-K-E.
Coming up on the 5-minute point, this is a major milestone where we go for auxiliary power unit starts. T-minus 5 minutes.
Morning air was cold on a January day. The blue sky watched in silence as the starship sailed away. Seven songs were playing, and seven hearts were won, and mystery put on its mask as seven songs were sung.
Six, we have made it to the start.
Starship fly on, sailed away.
One, and liftoff.
On the wings
liftoff,
in our minds, fly away.
Has cleared the tower.
To a world of hope and peace, where war and starship fly on, sailed away. Oh, blue sky, will you tell us any secrets you can share? Will you help us find the answer for all the brave who dare? Let the ocean be a pillow in all its unknown deep. Or seven songs still ringing and seven souls that sleep. Destination, let seven voices sing. Send back the word and tell us of joy that peace can bring. Oh, Captain, will you guide us till all the wars are gone? And teacher, will you teach us exactly how it's done? Starship fly on, sail away. Fly on, sail.
In 2013, Robert Di Gaetano wrote a opus number 2 for the Challenger. And this one is the theme of Mike Smith, The Militaire. This is a piano work commemorating astronaut Mike Smith. Robert Di Gaetano, pianist, celebrating or remembering Mike Smith, astronaut. That's one of a series. There's one work for every one of those astronauts by Robert. You've been listening to The Space Show with Andrew and Richard.